Trump has finally found his core demographic, people who will not be alive for his administration.
They've always been his demographic, haven't they?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. Mm-hmm. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Be brave.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. In Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast at 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI News Radio. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM. In Palinville, New York on 102.9 FM WLPP. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And yep. Streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, amongst others, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. You can run, but you can't hide. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for another thrilling, action-packed adventure as we try to make sense of the senseless, or whatever it is, whatever the hell it is we try to do here. Glad you could join us today. Hopefully, folks... on the southeastern seaboard have their hatches still battened down as Hurricane Matthew continues to batter the Florida coast as we go to air today. Powerful winds, potentially devastating storm surges and torrential rain, leaving we're looking at about 1 million people currently as we go to air who are without power. As officials are still trying to get folks to clear, to clear out of there if they can. Looks like much of Florida, and Des, you've been keeping an eye on this closer than I, but it looks like much of Florida has so far dodged the worst of of Hurricane Matthew.
Yes, most of it. However, there is still very strong storm surge damage in areas that are sort of in central and northern Florida, East Coast Florida, that they have inundation in St. Augustine and Jacksonville and other areas. So it's not like it's like they dodged a huge bullet. They still got hit, and they got hit pretty hard. But the worst is probably yet to come because there's some uncertainty in the forecast of exactly where Hurricane Matthew will track. Mm-hmm. But wherever it does end up going, it is going to increase storm surge. And that's the dangerous part. You know, they ask people to evacuate because they want to make sure you understand that if you're in a place where you decide to stay and you're wrong, emergency responders cannot save you.
And that is so far seems to be tied to the two dead that are so far on record here. One victim was a woman in her late 50s. She died from a cardiac arrest, according to St. Lucie fire officials, but because crews could not respond to her location. And the woman died by the time the crews arrived. In the other so far reported death in Florida, there was a report of an unconscious 82-year-old man who was having difficulty breathing, but it took a while for the emergency vehicles to deem it safe to go travel there and get the first responders there. The patient was taken to the hospital, but the man was later declared dead. Meanwhile, in Haiti and the other Caribbean nations, the death toll continues to rise there, and
yes,
there's been differing reports.
Well, there's an explanation for that. Now, Reuters is the one that has put out this very sadly high death toll. They say right now 842 have been confirmed dead, but that is
how many?
842. 842.
Wow.
They said that's based on their own compilation. It's based on combining information from the Civil Protection Service and also from local officials. So it could still change. It is very highly likely to go up because they're saying right now in these areas that were cut off that, you know, that because of poor home construction and roads and bridges going out, a lot of people died in their homes.
And then we'll still see the disease and so forth.
Oh, yeah, the humanitarian crisis afterwards from cholera is devastating.
This is potentially still storm surges up to 10 feet in Florida, in Georgia, in South Carolina, along about 500 miles of coast. Along those states. So no other Atlantic storm on record has packed such powerful winds for such a prolonged period of time as Hurricane Matthew. I guess that's because it didn't come on shore, so there's a plus and a minus there.
Right. Now there is a huge difference with the eye of the hurricane and the track of the eye of the hurricane wobbling just a little bit a few miles to the west would have been billions of dollars in damage for Florida. So that's what the nature of forecasting is. It's trying to give people a reasonable idea of where the worst is going to hit and where they might be in danger. And then we find out what actually happens. So, you know, if we're lucky, then, you know, South Carolina and Georgia might not get the full brunt of the hurricane, but they'll still sustain serious damage.
We can only hope. About 3 million people have been told to evacuate in Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina. Mandatory evacuations in Georgia. About 1 million people were ordered to move from coastal areas in South Carolina. So we will continue to keep our eyes on that, continue to hope for the best for everyone. And believe it or not, this is related. Registration, voter registration deadlines for the upcoming election are now beginning to land in a bunch of states over this weekend. Arizona's mail deadline for voter registration. This is on October 8th in Arizona, Mississippi, Montana, South Carolina. More on that in a minute. Hawaii's mail deadline for voter registration on Sunday. It's Rhode Island, Arkansas, Utah by mail, West Virginia by mail. Next week, Washington, Arizona, Alaska, Hawaii, Michigan, New Mexico, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Montana, Tennessee, Illinois, District of Columbia, Missouri. So a bunch of voter registration deadlines are coming down. If you are not registered to vote, or if you have moved and you haven't re-registered at your new address, now would be a very, very good time to do that, to check on it. Also, if you're if you think you are registered in one of those states, now is a good time to check and make sure you are actually still on those rolls. As we know, states like Ohio have been removing people from the rolls inaccurately, illegally, improperly, also with a lot of states now having different rules for voting, where your name has to match absolutely perfectly on your ID with how you are registered. There's a good time to check there as well. In Florida, as I mentioned, and this is how it ties back, the registration deadline is coming up, as I said, Tuesday of this coming week. So there was a whole bunch of voter registration drives planned for this weekend, and those are canceled now, many of them, most of them, with millions of people evacuated. The state of Florida has rejected a request from the Hillary Clinton campaign to extend the state's voter registration deadline because of the hurricane. Rick Scott, governor there, Republican governor there, and a man with a history of trying to keep people from being able to cast their proper votes. He said, "I'm not going to extend it. Everybody has had a lot of time to register. On top of that, we have lots of opportunities to vote, early voting, absentee voting, election day, so I don't intend to make any changes. I'm not going to extend it." Democratic-leaning political groups said they had to cancel these registration drives in the last days because of the storm. And they've been planning to do this for the last several days. And remember, this evacuation has been going on for several days throughout the week. And they've been concentrating more on getting the people out of there than they have been on doing voter registration, obviously. Election supervisors see a surge in voter interest right before the registration closes generally. University of Florida's Daniel Smith, who studies Florida voting very, very, very closely, said about 50,000 people registered during the final 5 days back in 2012. 50,000 people. So those are the kind of numbers that we're talking about that may be cut off here, unable to register at all before the deadline. Cancellations began last Wednesday. President Obama had called into a radio station, and the host there told them that their registration drive had been called off. Another group, Engage Miami Civic Fund, had intended to register students at Florida University, International University and Miami-Dade College. That has been called off. The busy weekend events have been called off for that group. In Orlando, the National Council of La Raza suspended canvassing on Thursday. And yet, the state of Florida says this is all political. This is a quote from Jackie Schultz, a spokeswoman from for Governor Rick Scott in the Miami Herald, said, "For any political party to ask this in the middle of a storm is political." That, according to Jackie Schultz, who works for Governor Rick Scott and who chairs a pro-Trump super PAC. It's amazing. Earlier in the day, this was on Thursday, South Carolina's Republican Governor Nikki Haley, she agreed to extend her state's registration deadline. Not a problem.
Somehow it wasn't political when she did it.
Well, not in South Carolina, I guess, where there are more registered Republicans than Democrats, perhaps. That's what a cynical person might say. I'm not cynical, though, of course. So there could be more lawsuits about this concerning the voter registration deadline. You know, in the past, when we've seen these storms at the last minute, accommodations are made for voters. We saw that Chris Christie did that up in New Jersey when Superstorm Sandy struck back in 2012. Rick Scott, so far at least, is refusing to do it. So please, please pay attention to these registration deadlines, because in many states, guys like Rick Scott, he ain't your friend, unfortunately. He's not a friend of the voters. In the meantime, there are very serious concerns about the fact that the Justice Department, the U.S. Justice Department, has reduced the number of federal observers that will be stationed inside of polling places this year in a big way. For the past 50 years, the U.S. Department of Justice has been sending out hundreds of observers and poll monitors across the country to ensure that voters are not intimidated, are not discriminated against when they cast their ballots. But because of what the U.S. Supreme Court did back in 2013 when it gutted the Voting Rights Act, you know, you hear me talking about that all the time, and the fact that the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act. Well, aside from keeping many of these Republican states from being able to enact laws that keep people from voting, that put restrictions on voting, restrictions that might have been, that would have had to get federal approval first. They don't have to get that approval anymore because of what the Supreme Court did. There's also this other effect, which is that list of jurisdictions, states and so forth, that used to require federal approval because of their history of racial discrimination at the polling place. That was the same list that the Department of Justice used as justification for going out and observing at the polls. Back in the summer, Attorney General Loretta Lynch had said, "In the past, we have relied heavily on election observers, specially trained individuals who are authorized to enter polling locations and monitor the process to ensure that it lives up to its legal obligations. But our ability to deploy them has now been severely curtailed." In the 2012 presidential election, the last presidential election before the court ruling that leads us now to the first time in 50 years that we'll have a presidential election without the full protection of the Voting Rights Act. Back in 2012, the Justice Department had sent out more than 780 observers and other personnel to polling places in 51 jurisdictions in 23 states to watch for unlawful activity. The observers were specially trained. They were required to be inside of the polling places. This year, the DOJ says that they are sending observers to fewer than 5 states and to those locations only because the oversight has been ordered by judges in very specific cases. Other than that, they can no longer use the Voting Rights Act as justification for sending out these workers. There are 14 states where poll workers are being asked to implement new laws, including voter ID requirements. For the first time in a presidential election, yet federal observers will not be sent inside those polling places in those states, according to the Washington Post. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights calls this a game changer. They add that historically, the Federal Observer Program has been valuable and necessary to help prevent intimidation and harassment of minority voters. Without those protections, Kristen Clark, president of Lawyers Committee, says, we are bracing for the worst. And all of this is happening at a time that Donald Trump is encouraging voters to go out and make sure there's no cheating in, you know, certain areas. So this is what we are looking towards on the ground. Brace for the worst. I think that's a good suggestion. And there are reasons to believe we are going to be seeing a mess, just an absolute mess this November. I continue to hope I'm wrong, but signs suggest otherwise. Signs suggest otherwise, particularly, well, in a number of states. But we've been talking about Wisconsin of late, where the their photo ID voting restriction had been knocked down time and again by the courts in Wisconsin, and yet the federal appellate court there has allowed that law to stay in place because at the last minute, the state of Wisconsin told, which is amazing, the state of Wisconsin told the federal appellate court that our DMV have now, all the workers there have now been retrained. If you walk in to any DMV and tell them you need a photo ID, you will be given a certificate that will allow you to vote on election day. Well, as Ari Berman reported last week at The Nation, that is not the case. A group named Vote Riders, we had their president on last week, has been going with volunteers in Wisconsin from Vote Riders, have been going with voters as they've tried to get photo ID, and they found out, in fact, the DMV workers were not trained in this idea that they're supposed to give out a certification immediately. They're supposed to give out a certificate that would allow voters to vote as long as they go to the DMV. This is what the state of Wisconsin had promised. Scott Walker, state of Wisconsin, had promised the federal courts. All you got to do is go to a DMV and you'll be given a certificate. Well, apparently they forgot to tell the workers at the DMV. And people are getting turned away in 7 out of 10 of the DMVs that Vote Riders checked. Now, there are some 300,000 already registered, legally registered voters in the state of Wisconsin who will not be able to vote this year under this new law, under this new photo ID restriction law that should have been cut down. Once the court heard about this, once the federal court heard about Berman's report, they were furious, and they have asked now the state to explain themselves. There's a hearing coming up on Wednesday. Frankly, they need to simply just suspend this law entirely for this election. Whether the federal court will do that or not remains to be seen, and even if they do it, it remains to be seen whether the U.S. Supreme Court will allow it, because the Supreme Court has said you can't make last-minute changes to election laws, even to bad election laws. In this case, of course, you have a bad election law about which the state has lied to that same federal court. Will that make any difference? I don't know, but that's the kind of chaos we're looking at. Potential chaos that we could be looking at in a state like Wisconsin and these other states where these laws have been passed. Now, because we tend to, you know, speak about these laws in general terms, 300,000 voters who have registered to vote, who won't be able to vote this year, under this new law unless they can figure out how to get a photo ID. Occasionally, we try to report on some specific cases. We've done this over the years because it'll give you a better idea of what is actually going on, the type of people that are actually being kept from their voting rights. And Ari Berman, again, over at The Nation, has been doing a great job of pulling out these stories. You know, these aren't just 300,000 in Wisconsin or more than a million in Texas. These are actual people who are actually fighting like hell and who have actually already lost their right to vote under previous elections since these laws have been passed. Ari Berman, I want to read part of this story from Ari. He writes about Christine Krucke. She was born in Lublin, Wisconsin in 1925. She first voted in the 1948 presidential election. She has voted ever since. She's an independent who has voted for John F. Kennedy. She also voted for Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. But since Wisconsin passed its photo ID law in 2011, Krucke has lost her right to vote. She made three trips to the DMV. Again, you know, the argument is, well, anybody, if you don't have ID, all you got to do is go to the DMV and get one. It's easy. They're free. Krucke made three trips to the DMV, bringing an Illinois photo ID, proof of residence in Wisconsin, a birth certificate, her marriage certificate, but she could not get a Wisconsin photo ID for voting, despite three trips. She first went to the DMV in Eau Claire, Wisconsin in June of 2013. She's been trying this now for 3 years. Back in June of 2013, she went with her daughter. Her daughter said, "My mother does not have an unexpired passport, a Wisconsin-issued photo ID, or any other kind of photo acceptable for voting," according to Sharon Erickson. That's her daughter. This was in a court declaration that was filed by the ACLU challenging this law. Krucke lived in Illinois for most of her life before she moved to Wisconsin 5 years ago, and she no longer drives. She brought her Illinois photo ID to the DMV. She brought a bank statement. She brought an insurance statement. But the DMV worker said she needed a birth certificate to get a Wisconsin ID for voting. The problem is that Krucke was born back in 1925 on a farm, and she has no idea where her birth certificate is. She called the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. She paid $20 for her birth certificate. However, her Polish last name, Zaskarinski, was spelled Zaskroninski instead. And there's a whole bunch of Z's and S's and C's in there that make it very difficult to even read it, you know, much less write it. So it was misspelled by a few letters. She brought the birth certificate. Nonetheless, she paid for it. She brought the birth certificate with her on the second trip to the DMV, and the DMV, once again, would not issue her a photo ID because the birth certificate didn't match her current name, which is Krucke, which she adopted after getting married. Yes, women get married, so their names are different than what's on their birth certificate. So yes, women face a taller obstacle in getting these photo IDs that are supposed to be free and easy at the DMV. They said she'd have to therefore obtain her marriage certificate from Illinois. So she paid $15 to get the marriage certificate from Cook County, Illinois, but it listed her maiden name as Bandis because Krucke had adopted that name rather than her Polish name, Zazrosinski, after moving in with her adopted stepsister in her late 20s. So now she makes a third trip to the DMV. Remember, she's already paid $20 for a birth certificate. She's already paid $15 for a marriage certificate, but she could not get a voter ID on the third trip because the maiden name on her Illinois marriage certificate did not match the name on her Wisconsin birth certificate. She said she'd have to change the name on her Illinois marriage certificate. Her daughter said that she almost went over the counter at the DMV. She was so furious. And this is just one story of hundreds of thousands of people facing these similar obstacles. But it's not over. The daughter, Erickson, called the courthouse in Cook County, Illinois, and they said that it would cost between $150 and $300 to amend her mother's Illinois marriage certificate. This is also this woman could vote, as she has been doing since 1948. A clerk in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, said there was a chance, quote-unquote chance, that a Wisconsin judge would amend her mother's document if they paid $300 in court fees. At that point, Erickson gave up trying to get her mother a Wisconsin voter ID. In the April 2016 presidential primary in Wisconsin, this was the first time, the first election in her life in which Krucky was unable to vote. And that was the election after which Governor Scott Walker said that the voter ID law, quote, works just fine. The daughter wrote a letter to the governor explaining the story of what her mother has been trying to go through. Remember, back in the 60s, a poll tax of $1.50 in the state of Virginia was found to be unconstitutional. And this woman has already paid how much? And gone through how many trips to the DMV? Thankfully, she had a daughter who was able to take her to the DMV three different times because she doesn't have a driver's license anymore, remember? Three different times to try to get her ID. In that letter, that angry letter to Scott Walker, the daughter wrote, "We want you to know how the law that you supported and signed into law affects your constituency in an extremely negative way. Why are the Wisconsin Republicans, as well as the Republicans nationwide, attempting to rig elections by stifling the right to vote of good and honest Americans?" Good question. Actually, it's not a good question. We know the question. We know the answer. Because they're trying to keep certain people from being able to vote. And they don't care if it affects a few Republicans along with it, because it'll affect more people who tend to vote Democratic than will vote Republican. So remember, this woman had voted for George W. Bush, had voted for Ronald Reagan. She, too, is being disallowed her right to vote. A group named One Wisconsin Now has filed a brief asking federal Judge Peterson, who had tried to block this law previously, but was overruled by the federal appellate court after the state of Wisconsin lied to the federal appellate court. So now they're asking Peterson to block this law entirely before the November election. There is this hearing coming up on Wednesday, which the judge has called on his own after hearing the way the state apparently lied to the federal court, lied, and about, you know, these court orders that they had to give a certificate to vote to anyone who walked in and asked for one to a DMV. The filing also notes that voters with IDs are not being given the help required by law. One third of voters, it says, who were formally denied IDs, most of whom were already disenfranchised in elections earlier this year, still do not have the ID they need to vote in the general election, which is 1 month away. The DMV, however, had said that we believe our process is sound. This was the head of the Department of Transportation. We'll see if that's what they say in court next week. There's also supposed to be an education campaign, by the way, that the state is supposed to be putting money into letting voters know about how the law works or doesn't. And the state reports that it's placed advertisements, for example, in 52 different movie theaters, letting people know throughout the state about what they need to do in order to vote under this new law. And as it turns out, according to this this complaint in federal court, not a single one of those ads is in theaters in Milwaukee. Democratic base, African American base. The state did not bother to let them know at all in their ads. That I'm sure they'll go into the court next week and they'll tell people, hey, we've got ads everywhere, movie theaters, so let people know. So that's just the story of one woman. Multiply that by tens and hundreds of thousands, and again, I don't care who they vote for. I want them to be able to exercise their right to vote, and hundreds of thousands in the state of Wisconsin are not going to be able to. And these photo ID restrictions have now been shown to limit the way to reduce the turnout for Democrats anywhere from 1.5% to as much as 8% in some places. In the meantime, That's not all that's going on in Wisconsin. Thousands of mailed absentee ballots could be thrown out because witnesses for the voters did not provide their full addresses. This according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today. A fraction of absentee ballots so far have been mailed in, but the number of ballots at risk of being completely tossed out, that's now in the hundreds, but it could easily grow to the thousands in the state's largest city alone. That's according to Neil Albrecht, the executive director of the Milwaukee Election Commission. In most cases where ballots are at risk, it's because the error on the absentee ballot is a minor one. The witness provided a street address, but did not name the municipality. So, for example, I don't know, do you understand this? So here in Wisconsin, if you want to vote by absentee, you can do so, but you have to have somebody witness it, and they have to put their name and their address that, you know, I witnessed that it was this person who was casting this absentee ballot.
Okay.
And some of these ballots are now coming in where they're signed by the witness who puts their street address on there, 1225 Olive Avenue. But they forgot to put the name of the city. They didn't put the name of the municipality on there. Despite the fact that the clerks are getting these in, they know what the municipality is. Often it's the same exact address as the person who's filling it out. So elderly, you know, couples who might vote absentee, they witness each other's absentee ballot. But they didn't put the name of the town.
So a clerical error, essentially.
But it's not an error. It's actually, it's on purpose. And as the Journal Sentinel reports, often the voter and the witness live at the same address, but clerks are not allowed to fill in the missing information unless they can track down the voter and get his or her permission. Albrecht, who runs the Milwaukee Election Commission, says, "What distresses me most about this is it's mostly seniors. And this issue is surfacing after Governor Scott Walker and the Republicans in the legislature approved a law that said mailed absentee ballots cannot be counted if witnesses do not provide a full address. Absentee ballots have long needed a witness to be signed with the ballot so that clerks can be confident that ballots are filled out by the voter that they were sent to and not by someone else. But in the past, witnesses were supposed to provide their addresses, but if they didn't, the ballots were still counted. That changed this spring with a provision that was tucked into legislation changing election law procedures. Milwaukee has received about 400 ballots so far where the witness supplied only partial addresses. According to Albrecht, they are trying to get in touch with these voters. That does not include instances where witnesses provided no address at all. In those cases, the ballots are simply returned to the voter to correct the problem. But if it's a partial address, they have to go track down the voter and try to get their permission to count the ballots. Albrecht expects this to reach into the thousands in the state of Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Election Commission has told clerks they can add the municipality or other address information only if they get the permission of the voters. But that is impractical, according to Albrecht, because voters don't typically have the clerks don't typically have the phone numbers or the email addresses for the voters. So that's also going on in Wisconsin. So when you hear people say, oh, you know what, Hillary's opening up in the polls, this is looking good for her, we don't have to worry anymore, never mind the fact that there's also, congressional elections, senatorial elections, local city elections, the ballot initiatives that are going to be on the ballot, all kinds of things above and beyond the presidential race that could be affected by a few dozen votes, a few hundred, a few thousand votes. But also, you are talking about the rights of individuals. You are talking about the right to vote that Republicans who pretend to give a damn about rights have been fighting like hell to keep people from having, and they're doing it specifically in states that they think they can win, that they think they can flip. And it's not just Wisconsin, it's also going on in Ohio and in Florida. And in a whole bunch of other states. We'll talk about a few of them after this break. I got to get out. Sorry, I'm running long, Desi. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more broadcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. That's all right. Riding around in the breeze. You're just trying to calm me down, aren't you there? How's it going?
Is it working?
Well, we'll see. We can't even talk about this breaking story, can we? We can talk about it. We cannot play this audio.
Yes, we cannot play this audio on FCC radio. Yeah. Sorry, folks.
That's all right.
That's what the internet's for.
You should say you're welcome, folks. Donald Trump was caught in a hot mic talking about what he likes to do to women. This was 10 years ago. So things are all better now. He says, quote, nobody has more respect for women than me. So we don't have to worry about what he said 10 years ago. Although I suspect other people will be playing this audio that it looks like NBC News. I'm not sure if they were the first ones to obtain it or not. But from 10 years ago, talking about grabbing women, starting to kiss them. And other things that we can't say
yes.
on this show.
Essentially, he's talking about groping women and, all the different ways that he would like to or has done in the past and ways that he's really gone after some women. And, I have to say it turned my stomach, personally, to hear the things that he was saying. So I'm glad we're not playing that. And I just want to note for the record, Kate Shepard, she's the editor of the environment section over at Huffington Post.
Yeah.
And she said, look, folks in the media, if your headline is anything less than, quote, Trump caught on tape discussing how to sexually assault women, she says, you're doing it wrong.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure everyone else will be talking about that all weekend and trying to figure out what it was that he actually said when they play the audio and they have to bleep out so much of it. In any event.
The poor women. Well, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Getting back to the stuff that matters. If you're concerned about a guy like that becoming president of the United States, then you need to be concerned about these stories we're talking about today, because details matter. Details matter if you're in Wisconsin and you're the witness for one of these absentee ballots, and you don't put the town on there. You live in a little town. Everybody knows where this town is, where this address is. That ballot will not be counted the way things are going right there in Wisconsin. So you need to pay attention to those kind of details. You need to pay attention to when the voter registration deadline is in your state. You need to pay attention to make sure you are still registered as you think you are.
And your friends and your family.
All of those little details matter. And it's not just Wisconsin, as I noted before the break. We've got a story I'm going to try to get to here in Ohio, where those details come into play as well. But all of this plays against this backdrop that continues. It's a drumbeat that continues, so we have to continue to cover it here to, try to help as many people, try to educate, inform as many people as we can. So there will be an actual army of people armed with facts on Election Day about what's going on. Over the weekend, Drudge Report had a headline stating that, 1,000 plus illegal voters in Virginia.
Ugh.
Illegal, and by illegal voters, they mean non-citizen voters. Dan Schiavano, who is the director of social media and a senior advisor to the Trump campaign, tweeted this link to the Drudge Report saying, terrible. We know who the 1,000 plus illegal aliens are not voting for. A fixed presidential election in the making. Will we ever know? The guy, who runs social media for the Trump campaign, a senior advisor, already putting a month before the election, saying the election is going to be fixed because of, 1,000 illegal voters in Virginia. Now, as Rick Hassan, election law professor at UC Irvine, points out, who actually bothered to read the report that the headline was based on, that Drudge Report was using, that Fox News was using, as it turns out, they identified only 31 actual non-citizen voters in Virginia over the last 10 years. So it's not 1,000 plus illegal aliens in there voting for Hillary Clinton. No, it's 31 non-citizen voters in Virginia over the past 10 years out of millions and millions, perhaps hundreds of millions of votes at this point that were cast in Virginia. 31. So it is not 1,000 plus, as Hassan points out. adding, "Don't believe the hype. Non-citizen voting is a real but very small problem because the penalties are high and the payoff is low." Yeah, you'll get, you know, deported for one, thrown in jail for two, fined up to $10,000 for three. Hassan adds, "We should still deal with the problem," and I agree, "but we should deal with it," as he notes, "with universal voter registration conducted by the federal government. Let everyone be registered to vote, period." And he says, "national voter ID with an optional thumbprint." Well, there's an idea. Republicans have been trying to stop national ID for years. Even claiming that everyone should have an ID. Well, every time the federal government tries to say, okay, let's have a national ID system, the Republicans are against it. They think it'll be a privacy issue, whatever it is. But, you know, it's counter to the very thing that they pretend to want in these states where they're pushing these ID laws. And what about that optional thumbprint? A thumbprint. We have the technology now that you can walk into the polling place and they can have a device. You put your finger on it and it confirms you are who you say you are. Or hell, you could have them take a photo with an iPhone of a voter who doesn't have the needed ID and then let them vote normally. And then now you've got a photo of this person. But those are not solutions that Republicans are putting forward to, because there's really, in truth, there's no problem here, and they don't want a solution to it, even if there was. Hassan says, "Don't expect non-citizens to steal the presidential election." Well, guess who still does? Donald Trump. In a meeting with a Border Patrol union leader today, Trump claimed that the federal government is allowing undocumented immigrants to enter the country in order to vote in the upcoming presidential election. Donald Trump told reporters who were covering this meeting today, this according to a transcript that was posted by NBC's Ali Vitale, he said, "I'm sure you're not going to write it, but to me, they're letting people pour into this country so that they can vote." Trump was responding to a statement from Art Del Cueto, the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council, which is a union representing Border Patrol agents that has endorsed Donald Trump. According to the LA Times, Cueto said that they're checking the records. They're noticing that they have criminal records, but they're setting them aside because at this point they're saying immigration is so tied up with trying to get people that are on the waiting list, hurry up and get them their immigration status corrected to make them citizens. This guy's just making stuff up at this point. That makes no sense, by the way. Trump responds, "And these are professionals. These are people that want to do it. You hear a thing like that, it's a disgrace, I'll tell you. Well, it'll be a lot different if I get elected." Asked about Trump's comments and what the hell he was talking about on Friday, White House Deputy Secretary Eric Schultz said, "I haven't seen the comments and I have no idea what he would use to back those up." Sean Moran, a spokesperson for the National Border Patrol Council, told the Chicago Tribune that the roundtable discussion had conflated two entirely separate issues: illegal border crossings into the U.S. and the naturalization process for potential citizens. Moran said that no border agents had been directed to allow anyone in illegally to vote. Border Patrol agents are not involved in the naturalization process. That's under the purview of the U.S. Customs and Immigration Services. So much bad information out there. All right, very quickly. I know we got to get to another break, but let me do this very quickly. Back on September 13, there was a 2-1 decision, a 3-judge panel in Ohio, in the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, that rejected a challenge to Ohio's provisional absentee voting rule. The plaintiffs had argued that the rules applying to absentee ballots were being applied differently in different Ohio counties, which was a violation of Bush v. Gore from 2000 that said all the votes needed to be counted the same way. Some counties were actually tossing ballots because of minor errors, and others were actually counting those ballots. So the plaintiffs in this case, who lost this 2-1 decision, they said they'd like the entire Sixth Circuit to rehear the case, but that has now been rejected. and a written opinion promises to follow from the Sixth Circuit Court. But the plaintiffs are now considering maybe going to the Supreme Court, where the options are not great because of the 4-4 tie on the Supreme Court. This is from the statement from the plaintiff's counsel. The court has ensured that thousands of registered Ohio voters whose eligibility county election boards do not question. So we know that they're registered voters. There's no question about that. But thousands of these registered Ohio voters will now be disenfranchised over trivial errors and omissions on ballot forms, like missing a zip code, writing in a name in legible cursive rather than in block letters, as they are instructed. If they use cursive, it won't be counted in some counties, but not others. The court has also tolerated a situation in which large urban counties with the biggest percentages of minority voters are disenfranchising voters over these trivial ballot form errors and omissions, when the small, white, rural counties have been exposed as not doing so. For example, the plaintiffs wrote, if you inadvertently leave your zip code off of your form in Cuyahoga, Franklin, Hamilton, Stark, or Lucas counties, you will be disenfranchised, even if the board has no doubt regarding your eligibility. While in Meigs County and other small counties, that vote will count. They will count that same vote that would have been thrown out in these large counties. How is that remotely fair, the plaintiffs ask. In this case, the court swept these undisputed, inconvenient facts in the record under the rug and did not even discuss them. The appeals court decision defies Bush v. Gore and its own recent precedents. It neuters the Voting Rights Act as well, which prohibits the disparate racial impact that these practices represent. The homeless coalitions who filed this case say they do not understand how a judge whose House Speaker husband the case accuses of leading racial discrimination and constitutional and voting rights violations can feel free to participate in a court decision denying voting rights. Or how this is the impartial justice that our system promises. So this judge, who is married to the House Speaker in Ohio, did not recuse herself from this decision. Ohioans need to be incredibly vigilant when filling out absentee and provisional ballot forms, the plaintiffs say, because Secretary Husted, John Husted, Secretary of State in Ohio, is playing a game of disenfranchisement gotcha, rather than showing a devotion to counting every legitimate vote. They say while we are still studying our Supreme Court options, hopes for affected Ohio voters in this close presidential election may well be lost. Voters may never learn that their ballots were not counted. Pay attention to the details, people, wherever you are. The details, the registration details, the registration deadlines, when you fill out those absentee ballots. Make sure you get it right. A state like Ohio is incredibly close on the presidential election, presidential level, and all of the other elections on the ballot as well. Pay attention to the details. Details count, particularly in cases where you've got public officials who don't want your vote to count. Don't let that happen. And when I hear from people who say, oh, I don't like either of the candidates, well, there's a lot more than just two candidates on the presidential ballot, but there's a lot more stuff that's on the ballot itself. Your vote matters, particularly when people want to take it away from you. Don't let them. Quick break, and we're back with more. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Donald Trump does want you to vote. It's not that the Republicans want everyone to not vote. They do want people to vote, certain people to vote. And in this case, he was out, talking to elderly people who may be too sick to vote this year. Stephen Colbert noticed this at one of Donald Trump's rallies just yesterday, I believe.
He asked for a favor from an unlikely group, the terminally ill.
I don't care how sick you are. I don't care if you just came back from the doctor and he gave you the worst possible prognosis, meaning it's over. You won't be around in 2 weeks. Doesn't matter. Hang out till November 8th. Get out and vote.
Yeah. Just go into that booth, pull that lever out of spite. If I gotta go, I'm taking y'all with me. I really think. I really think Trump has finally found his core demographic, people who will not be alive for his administration.
Yes.
Sure.
No kidding. No kidding. Speaking of people who won't be alive for his administration, well, that's not fair. Okay, remember back, okay, in 2008, Sarah Silverman, do you remember this, Des? She was at the time, back in 2008, Barack Obama was running for president for the first time. There was a lot of elderly people who, let's say, have a different racial outlook than younger voters.
Okay.
And down in Florida, she was urging, and once again, Florida was, concerned it was going to be a swing state, just as it will be this year. She was concerned, that you had a whole bunch of old Jewish people down in Florida who were afraid to elect the black guy, basically.
Right.
And younger voters, millennials and so forth, they weren't quite as afraid as their grandparents might be. So Sarah Silverman put out a video at the time urging these young voters to get in touch with their elderly grandparents down in Florida to encourage them to tell them, okay, please, you can go vote. You can go vote for Barack Obama. Here's a little bit of Sarah Silverman back in 2008.
If Barack Obama doesn't become the next president of the United States, I'm going to blame the Jews. I am. And I know you're saying like, oh my God, Sarah, I can't believe you're saying this. Jews are the most liberal, scrappy, civil rightsy people there are. Yes, that's true. But you're forgetting a whole large group of Jews that are not that way, and they go by several aliases. Nana, Papa, Zadie, Bubby, plain old Grandma and Grandpa. These are the people who vote in Florida, and the Florida vote can make or break an election. If you don't think that's true, why don't you think back to two elections ago when a little man named Al Gore got by Florida. I'm making this video to urge you, all of you, to schlep over to Florida and convince your grandparents to vote Obama. It can make the difference. There's nobody more important or influential over your grandparents than their grandkids, you. If they vote for Barack Obama, they're gonna get another visit this year. If not, let's just hope they stay healthy until next year.
So that was 2008, Sarah Silverman encouraging the young voters to go tell their Jewish grandparents that they needed to vote in Florida. Well, now the tables are turned. The tables are turned 8 years later, and there's a concern that millennials will not turn out to vote, won't turn out to vote at all, won't vote for Hillary Clinton. So a group that supports Hillary Clinton, a group of elderly Jewish men and women. It's an American Jewish voters group. And there's reason, by the way, for these Jews to be concerned about Donald Trump. Trump has some Jewish support, the Christian Science Monitor notes, but the majority of American Jews oppose his candidacy. They write, for starters, the Trump campaign has released some anti-Semitic imagery and rhetoric, including tweeting a picture of Clinton against a backdrop of $100 bills with a six-pointed star, pronouncing her the most corrupt candidate ever. I love how they put it. Many saw it as a Star of David because it was a Star of David. Trump also initially refused to disavow anti-Semitic former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke. Trump's alt-right and white nationalist supporters regularly use anti-Semitic rhetoric and imagery and target Jewish journalists on social media. And this is a concern for some Jewish voters, the hostile stance that he's had against Muslims and immigrants. Because, as Christian Science Monitor notes here, Trump's proposals against immigrants and Muslims are threatening to many American Jews who identify with the experiences of immigrants and religious minorities. So this comes from the Bend the Arc is the name of the group. It's an anti-Trump video. It taps into the fears of many of these older Jewish voters about Donald Trump, that he is willing to erode minority groups' rights, and that may eventually lead to targeting other groups. These elderly Jewish folks in this video have a message for their grandkids.
This is probably one of the most important elections because there's so much at stake.
We have seen this before. We saw it in Germany, and we don't want to see it here.
Mr. Trump is a narcissist. He's unpredictable.
He's petulant. Yeah, he reminds me of my kid when he was little. He's petulant.
Well, I'm afraid he's far more than a putz.
Trump is definitely a tyrant.
I just find him an obnoxious, lying individual, and I haven't any respect for him, and I have tremendous fears for this country and for you, my grandchildren.
If you vote, the future is yours.
If you don't vote,
for Hillary.
And that crazy man Trump is elected.
I'll haunt you when I die.
My ghost will make sure that the kale in your fridge will rot twice as fast.
I will haunt your Tinder and only let you swipe right on rabbis' daughters.
I will come back from the dead and I will unlike all your Facebook updates, whatever that means.
I'll spoil every episode of Game of Thrones.
When you're having a dinner party, my ghost will come down and say something racist. But if you're voting for Trump, you probably don't care.
You can tell I'm a ghost and not a Trump supporter, right?
He's dressed in a white sheet there. That was from the Bend the Arc group, obviously opposing Donald Trump in favor of Hillary Clinton. My, how the worm has turned in just 8 years. We got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it as ever at bradblog.com. Share it with your friends on the Facebooks and the Twitters, where you can find me. I am simply the Brad Blog there. You can also drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. All right. My thanks again to those who have stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to do what we do, commercial and ad free, right here on your public airwaves. Thank you for everything. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.